Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk to Dennis Stewart. Welcome, Dennis. Lovely to have you.
It's very nice to be back.
Always good to see you. Now, Dennis, last time we spoke, you mentioned the term functional foods, particularly dealing with beetroot. Now, before we review the potential benefits of beetroot, could you explain what functional foods are?
Look, I'm glad you've asked that question because when I think of functional foods, I think of the words of the great philosopher and early medical practitioner Hippocrates, who made that remarkable statement that food is your best medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And functional foods are really a good representative of what he was trying to say, that food is not just something we eat for pleasure. It is certainly associated with that. And too frequently, it's just restricted to the concept of pleasure. Historically, food has always been seen as more than that, as being food or substances that are used to nourish, to improve health, and to, in fact, fight disease. It's just that in modern times, particularly with commercialized food outlets and with an emphasis on fast food, even the food that I was raised on has largely been forgotten, let alone the concept that food is more than just eating something. Food can be, in fact, a very useful agent in resisting disease and, in fact, treating disease and or the consequences of disease. Hence, food is your best medicine, and functional foods represent a group of foods which are becoming more scientifically recognised as having potential to help manage very many serious diseases, particularly preventatively, and even diseases that are active. It's now been recognised that there are a select group of foods which are more than just pleasurable substances to eat, that they may well be, but they in fact have a medicinal effect within the body and supports the body's physiological processes in resisting disease and helping fight the disease. For some time on this program, I have mentioned that remarkable book by the two French-Canadians, Gingras and Bellevue, Foods That Fight Cancer. And I'm not going to dwell on that book, but what it does, great book that it is, it presents, if you like, the concept that even something as serious as cancer can be resisted, can be managed even with certain foods. And the foods that are mentioned in Foods That Fight Cancer by the two French-Canadians, who, let me remind listeners, are not just ordinary blokes like myself, but are in fact men with PhDs working in Quebec in a hospital scientific laboratory looking at the way in which they have demonstrated that a select group of foods, some of which we've mentioned on this program, and over time I could keep mentioning them, such as my belief in what these two men have written, but they have argued and presented very easily in a text that is worthwhile reading, easily obtained, reasonably priced, that there are molecules in certain foods which can be shown pharmacologically and physiologically to be able to resist the process of carcinogenesis and, in fact, to fight and help fight cancer when it is active. They have written a book, in other words, of what are called, or what I call, functional foods. Foods that, let me emphasise again, are being increasingly recognised by the medical, the pharmaceutical, the academic community, if you like, as having great benefits in helping human beings move beyond just a dependence on pharmaceuticals, good as they are, but seeing that in nature there are plenty of things there that can offer great help to people who are willing to recognise that a functional food is different. It's not just something that is pleasurable to eat. Sometimes it isn't pleasurable to eat, but can have a significant effect in helping them fight disease. Functional food. Foods that help fight disease and manage health.
And before we get into functional foods, I've got Peter on the line. Hi, Peter.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thank you. How can we help you?
I just want a question. Got a question for Dennis. I just want to, what is the best food to keep your high blood pressure down?
Okay, Peter. Presumably you're on medication, are you?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Look, let me just say that the modern pharmaceutical management for blood pressure, in my opinion, is great. And I would advise all patients and listeners whose blood pressure is being managed by their good doctor not to depart from what they're doing. And if they are to seek to help their blood pressure in some way through diet and lifestyle, that's great. But it should also be passed on to their GP so that he can monitor any improvement and maybe down the track alter medication appropriately. Now, I'm obliged to say that because people think that they can just go on and off BP medication.
Yeah, I realise that. I just want to know what the best food
Well, I'm going to surprise you when I say that my research suggests that one of the best foods that's has significant, credible pharmacological, that means explanation as to how it works, one of the most important foods is that which I'm going to talk about further in a moment, and that is the ongoing regular use of the beetroot. Now, people might laugh about beetroot. I love it and remember my early youth when beetroot used to be on every hamburger that I bought when they still made hamburgers. Credibly and scientifically, it's coming into its own as a functional food. And I spoke about that earlier. That's the recognition that foods ain't just foods. Foods can be medicine. And I'm referring here to a paper that I just want to mention because people frequently ring in and say, where did you get that reference, or what's the book, or what's the paper? And I mention this for listeners, some even who may be academics that are interested in following this topic. I'm referring to a paper that's easily obtained on the net, a paper put out by the Journal of Cancer Prevention, in which the topic beetroot as a potential function food is called up. Now, I mentioned that for those that are interested in the reference. Now, in that paper, there's a very, very positive indication that because we know something about the chemistry of what the beetroot has, we can say that it has an effect on helping manage blood pressure in the context of a good lifestyle, but we know that it works as a dilator, and as such reduces systemic blood pressure and inhibits the build-up of plaque by reducing inflammatory cell problems. Now, I'm referring to the paper there deliberately, where there is encouragement to see that due to the nitrogen oxide molecules in the beetroot, it has a useful effect on the blood vessels itself, and as such, we have good evidence to explain why the regular ongoing use of this food can help blood pressure, bringing it down, help it, I'm emphasising, and help blood flow, mainly because of what we refer to and what I've referred to as its vasodilatory action, that is, the effect that it has on blood vessels in reducing systemic blood pressure. Now, that is not to encourage everyone out there to think that beetroot is the answer to blood pressure. You've asked a sensible question, Peter. What can I do to help my blood pressure? What I'm saying is, based on my study, my understanding, my love for this food, and my recommendation of it to my patients, I would say quite confidently that the regular daily use of beetroot in any form, and Peter, let me just mention now that many of my patients that are harnessing this knowledge are using some of the good powdered preparations of beetroot that are available. And this is an easy way of taking it rather than perhaps juicing it. Juicing is great, but the powdering of the food doesn't in any way at all detract from its active chemistry. All that's happened in the powdering of the food is that the vegetable has been dried out, has been pulverized and made in a convenient form, where most of the packages that I recommend and pass on to my clients and patients recommend that the powder of beetroot juice should be about 1 to 2 teaspoonfuls per day. Be guided by what's on the label, but my reading suggests that that's reasonable. It's a food. 1 to 2 teaspoonfuls of the powder can perhaps bypass your need to be making the preparation all the time as a juice. It's a convenient way because you can use it on a daily basis in a convenient form, and it's conveniently priced. So you've asked for what is one of the best foods to help your blood pressure. You might be laughed at if you mention that to some medical practitioners, unfortunately, who know little about functional foods. I'm hoping that they will learn a lot more about it, but don't be put off by that. You get on the net, follow up what I've said, just punch in beetroot as useful as a food.
Yeah, I've been using the beetroot.
Good.
I bought my own beetroot.
Good.
But I've been told the best properties of the beetroot is the skin, all the skin and all.
Well, look, you're probably right there. Listeners might not know that the whole of the beetroot shares similar characteristics, and that's why eating the leaves of the beetroot is a useful way of harnessing the food also. But when you process it and convert it into a convenient form, as you are seemingly doing, it is the whole vegetable that's used. All that would happen would be the food would be dehydrated, skin and all would go into the pulverizing process, and that would be incorporated into the powder. Look, I'm a great fan for using the food in its natural form. In fact, I'll say a great shout out here to one of my friends and patients from Abermain who regularly brings me in beetroot. It seems to be something that she has a predilection for, and periodically I'm the beneficiary of it. So I see it. As one of the most remarkable foods. I could talk all day about it, but I won't.
Okay, awesome. I'm on the right track then. I just thought there might have been something else.
Peter, there are many others, but I can't talk about many others, although this year I'll be talking a little bit more about functional foods, and here and there I'll mention some. And I'll just say this quickly and then move the topic on. One might sort of... surprise you greatly when I say that the work done by a very prominent American doctor and practitioner, the work done by him has demonstrated that the eating of one onion per day, right? The eating of one onion per day, and that is a real onion, not some of the debilitated sweeter onions. This is the brown or the white onion. The name of the doctor is a Dr. Viktor Gurevich, and I should know the university that he was working at and the work that he did. The work on the onion is called up in Gene Peterson's book, or Carpenter's book, Gene Carpenter's book, entitled Food Pharmacy. Remarkable book for people that want to follow the potential of food for health. But the regular use of the onion has a significant effect also in helping manage a blood pressure problem.
Awesome. Would you eat that raw or cook it?
Well, ideally, this is what might cause some people to not want to do it, but let me remind you, Peter, I'm sure you share my views, that many other cultures don't see too much wrong with having an onion breath or a garlic breath. We Anglos tend to be too soft, but many other ethnic communities have no problem with it. Ideally, onion, which is related to the garlic, they both belong to the same family, they should be eaten raw. Now, there are consequences of that, perhaps socially or in a relationship way, but I don't see too much of a problem with it. And if you want to get the benefit of this, we sometimes have to lose our Anglo sensitivity and eat foods that have more going for it than just someone turning their nose up at us.
Yeah.
Maybe chew a mint leaf.
Well, there you go. My associate doctor here has just mentioned that many would say that chewing parsley is a useful way. Perhaps it is. But at the end of the day, you either like onion or you don't. and I don't mind it.
Well, I like it too, but like you said, you had all that on a hamburger anyhow, so...
Yeah, but do you have enough?
Thanks for your call, Peter. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Thanks David. Or Peter, bye. Thank you.
Dennis, are you there?
Yes,
hello.
How are you?
Good, thank you. You want to talk about inflamed sinuses?
If I could, please, yes.
Yes, go for it.
How can we help you, Dennis?
I have inflamed sinuses. I had the first surgery 18 months ago.
Yes.
And fixed up my breathing.
Yes, good,
I've lost smell and taste.
Oh, dear.
And it's due to inflamed sinuses. And the only drug I've found that actually works for it is prednisone.
Yeah, you can't stay on that for too long.
So I wonder if there's anything out there in the natural world that might be able to help me out.
Well, look, there's a starting base for you. If you're a patient of mine or a client of mine or a listener of mine, a starting base for all inflamed conditions of the upper respiratory tract, particularly the sinuses, is a combination of bromelain and quercetin. Bromelain and quercetin. Now, bromelain is a pineapple enzyme which has a particular relationship to infection and inflammation of the sinuses, and quercetin is a bioflavonoid which has some anti-inflammatory characteristics of its own, amongst other things. Put those two together, and they're usually prescribed together, usually in a preparation where they're combined, and that, in my opinion, is a good way to help manage this condition. It would take a little time, but that combination is very, very safe. And many patients or clients that have come to my rooms at New Lambton will have gone away and subsequently thanked us for the advice that myself and my staff would have given about using this preparation as a starting base. Now, secondarily, and this might seem a little bit paradoxical because the name doesn't convey the benefit, the European, British European herb called eyebright. Eyebright is primarily used for inflammatory states of the eye, blepharitis and conditions like that. But in most English herbal medicine texts, it is considered to be useful for all discharging inflammatory states of the sinuses as well as conditions of the eye. So a capsule of the herb eyebright, which is very economical and available from our health food stores or these days pharmacies as well, a capsule of eyebright taken in conjunction with a combination of bromelain and quercetin, I think that's a pretty useful starting base, Dennis, but give it time to work. Don't expect that it'll do a steroid job. It's not a steroid, but it hasn't got the downside of the steroid either. Start to use it. Plenty of vitamin C as well, and I think you'll do a lot better than just trying to sort of let it heal itself. Sometimes inflammatory conditions are reluctant to do that.
Okay. How do you spell the bromelain, Dennis?
B-R-O-M, E-L-A-I-N, bromelain.
And what was the second one, sorry?
Quercetin, Quercetin.
Okay, perfect.
Now, your health food store or your pharmacist would have plenty of information on that preparation. It's readily researched on the net if you want to get more technical information, but I can vouch for the benefits that it's been to my practice over many years where it is used as a chronic supplement.
Perfect. Now I'll go with your recommendation, mate. I'll be sourcing that out.
Good
idea.
Are
you still got a shop over at Warners Bay?
No, but there are good people there in the shop at the health food store at Warners Bay. Most of our health food store proprietors in Newcastle, they're well-trained, very ethical, know what they're talking about.
Right. Thanks very much, Dennis.
Good on you.
I'll give that a go, and hopefully I'll be able to taste and smell again.
Good on you.
Thanks very much. You have a great day. Bye, Dennis. Bye. Next, we've got Karen from Harvey Bay. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Hi. You want to talk about tin beetroot?
Yeah, I just wondered whether, I think tinned beetroot might have vinegar or something in it, and I wondered whether that affected the properties of the beetroot, whether it would still work the same.
Look, beetroot probably is in there. I'm not, like, I use canned beetroot. I'm not opposed to it at all. I'm not familiar with the actual processing of it. I suspect that probably the vinegar is A, to give it a little bit of flavour, and to maintain the stability of the chemistry of the beetroot. I can't see any reason why that wouldn't be a useful way of harnessing the benefits of beetroot. I certainly would have no problem using it. So, as I say, I'm not familiar with the commercial process, but all I can say is that I'm happy to use it. I suspect that that's probably there as a flavouring, or maybe something to also preserve and maintain the stability of the product.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I thought you're right. It probably is there for flavour. I just didn't know, because I know vinegar probably has its own properties, and I didn't know if that would affect.
It does. It does indeed. Vinegar, in my opinion, is in itself a medicinal substance.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks very much,
Karen. Thanks,
Karen. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Next, we've got Tony from Wanji. Hi, Tony.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
That's all right. What can we do for you?
Last year I was diagnosed with throat cancer. Mm-hmm. I've gone through all the treatment of the chemo and radiation and so forth. I finished that, the end of November.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still going through a few problems with it. I'm on the mend, but I'm still going through a few problems with sore throat and swallowing and so forth.
Good.
My question to you, Manuka honey.
Yes.
Can I get any much benefit out of using that product?
Tony, anything with a good honey, it has got to be doing you good. What I would say is, and you've probably researched this yourself, but Manuka honey, which has been made famous by the New Zealanders, we use the same product under the name of Jelly Bush, but the British are doing a lot with Manuka honey, and in some of the references that I have looked at, throat cancer is being helped as far as managing the side effects of it post-surgery by some British hospitals or health professionals. I will try to find the reference for you. I'm sure it is being used, Manuka honey, for the purpose of addressing the post-operative symptomatology of that particular procedure. So I would think that it's not just on the soothing effect that honey has. That's great and terribly underrated. Let me emphasise, not just because I'm a beekeeper myself, as is most of my family necessarily, but honey is one of the most soothing substances for the respiratory system. And in the old days, pharmacists used to make an oxymel of various preparations. And the oxymel basically means a preparation where honey was one of the major constituents. Oxymel of squill was a very famous, old, very effective respiratory medication, particularly for chronic bronchial conditions and cough conditions. Wish to God it was made more today. But Manuka honey, I think, is not just there for its soothing effects. A lot of scientific work has been done, again, I suspect, I should know the gentleman's name, by a New Zealand scientist who has brought out of some very chemical interpretations for the benefit of seeing Manuka having an activity that transcends just its soothing characteristics. And that's why I suspect that it's more expensive to purchase than what I will loosely refer to as ordinary honey. I think the English and the New Zealanders are onto something there, and that it has something perhaps more than just a soothing characteristic. Look at the overall chemistry of the substance. And if you were to ring my rooms, Tony, they would leave your telephone number. I might even have the paper back there and the reference for you to follow it up. But I think you're on the money when you're using Manuka honey for that condition, because I'm sure that I have read that that's how it's being used in the UK, which are one of the biggest buyers of Manuka honey.
You hit the nail on the head when you said the price of the difference to a Manuka honey and just your normal honey.
Yeah.
But I did a bit of homework in that area as far as prices go. The only outlet I can find down around my area is Woolworths, and they vary, same quantity in the jar, they vary from $10 up to over $100. The old saying is, you know, you only get what you pay for.
Yeah.
Look, is there any difference in the actual product?
The way the Manuka honey is seemingly marketed is by a grading of its potency.
Right.
And that would be based on a Manuka factor, as they call it. Look, I'm a bit like you. I worry about the way in which some of these health products are perhaps being priced ridiculously.
Well, who's profiteering? Who's profiteering from what?
Well, look, I hate to say that. And to be fair, Woolworths have good product. I do a lot of shopping there. I don't think... All that they would be doing is perhaps reflecting the way in which the cost of the product is related to its grading, regardless of where you buy it. And I would think that you're buying the product there. They couldn't sell it without it being graded, and I suspect they're selling a good grade, a good potency of it, and that is not too much different from what you find anywhere else. Now, look, I'm not a big... Please don't think I'm a shareholder in Woolworths or Coles. I'm not. But I shop there and I'm a little bit reluctant to talk them down when, in fact, their product, Manuka, might be as good as anywhere else.
Yeah, but, you know, as I'll say, you know, what you're getting for value, straight cancer isn't just a walk in the park. And if you're going to spend $10 or spend $150,
you need to be sure.
Better.
You need to be sure. Mm-hmm. Look, contact Marooms. I'll pass on the name of the literature and I'll try and get it for you that justifies this.
All right, good on you, mate.
Thanks much, Tony. Appreciate the call. This is Health Naturally on 2NURFM. And we've got Carmen from Catherine Bay on the line. Carmen, you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes.
I'm actually calling from Catherine Hill.
I thought, I'm like, hang on a minute, that seems like a typo.
Okay, that's all right. Dennis, I've been finding your information this morning very interesting. I just have one quick question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you can answer it online, but Panadol Osteo, what are the effects if it is to be taken on a regular basis? I'm thinking of the gut.
Look, I think here the best person to answer that, Carmen, and I'm not trying to dodge the question, but the best person to answer that would be your good pharmacist.
Oh, okay.
They're experts at this, and I have great regard for our pharmacists because they're not just conveyors of retail things, as you would agree, but they're sources of knowledge. And these days I think that's been more recognised than ever, and I thank God for that. Go and have a yarn with your pharmacist. I know the product. I have used the product. I think my wife still uses it a bit. I think it probably comes down to the fact that all these things have got their role to play. But anything ongoingly, whether it be herbal, vitamin, or pharmaceutical, needs to be used on a knowledge base.
Okay, wonderful. All right. Well, I'll do that because I can go to Swansea and check.
Good on you. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for that. Enjoying the program. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, Dennis, do you think that we place too much emphasis on supplements and not enough on food and nutrition?
Look, I do. And this should not be interpreted in any way as knocking or putting down our good health food stores and pharmacies. Pharmacies are stocking supplements these days just as well as the health food stores. something I thought I'd never see 20 or 30 years ago, how things have changed. But look, I think there's a danger today that with the proliferation of vitamin and mineral and herbal supplements and a lot of over-the-counter advice, that, and good as that might be, I think there might be a tendency for people to think that the more supplements you're taking, the healthier you're likely to be. I dissent from that view and believe that supplements have their role to play where there is a defined health problem that may be benefited by the sensible taking of correct vitamin and mineral supplements. I think when I was at the university, we did a program on human bioscience, and one of them was basically climaxed by saying that living in the Western world today, a useful health device would be for everyone to take a complete vitamin and mineral supplement as a way of covering the patches, if you like, in the shortcomings of the Western diet. I don't think that's a bad idea. A multivitamin and multi-mineral supplement puts you in a good position, I believe. But do we have to base health on taking more and more vitamins and supplements, despite what the industry says, pharmaceutical and natural health industry, despite what that might be promoted along this line? I don't think it is, but it may be. Food is still your best medicine.
Agreed. Diane from Salamander Bay, last call. Hi, Diane. What can we do for you?
Hi, Dennis.
Hello, Diane.
Hi. Thanks for the great talk this morning. There's a lot of great information.
Thank you.
I have been diagnosed about 3 months ago with piriformis syndrome, which, of course, you probably are aware of. And I have been researching things that will help with nerve pain. And I wondered whether you are familiar with the product Nerve Calm and whether it works and whether the products that are included in it will help at all.
Diane, look, I'm happy to comment on this, but I suggest what you do is perhaps email me or contact my rooms.
Yep.
Let me know the product you're taking and let me know the constituents in it and the claims that are made, and I will give an opinion on it.
I'm actually not taking it at the present time.
No, that's fine.
I'm not taking anything other than what the doctor has
diagnosed. That's good. If your doctor has diagnosed a neurological problem, you're probably on neurological medication, and if you are on that and getting a benefit, I think you would need to be cautious about too quickly getting away from it. I'm happy to give information on what I think the constituents in the preparation might do.
Okay.
But it's best if you contact my rooms and I will email and give you my opinion.
Thanks, Dennis. I shall do that.
Thank you, Diane.
Okay.
Thank you, Diane. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dennis, we've got about a minute or so left. Do you want to sum up beetroot since we've been talking about beetroot so much?
Look, beetroot, you could talk on it all day, but I might surprise listeners when I say that beetroot has benefits, as I've already intimated, on the circulatory system. And as a result of that, it has some benefits in reproductive problems, libido, and particularly with the male, one of the most common conditions amongst the male, and I'll not elaborate on radio what it is, but it's related to the way in which the vasodilatory capacity of certain constituents in the beetroot, particularly nitric oxide, has a benefit if for some, or well, one very common male reproductive disorder. I'm not going to elaborate on it, but listeners can look up themselves beetroot as a regular ongoing supplement to address male problems.
So would it help for females too, or not really?
It's distinctly male in this case. I'm not being in any way at all. I'm not in any way at all being a chauvinistic or sexist. But
I get your point. I get your point.
It's rather limited.
Dennis, we are out of time. Thank you so much.
Okay, as you're always, laughing.
I am. It's been wonderful. Okay. We'll catch you next week. Right. Health Naturally 2 and URFM.